You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.
The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that the United States is trying to transfer Daesh to Afghanistan in order to justify its presence in the region. As Afghanistan reels from violence, the U.S. has announced another troop increase. In this edition of the debate, we will look at why the U.S. strategy, after nearly 17 years, has failed, and also look at the role that Pakistan plays in the security of the country.
The U.S. and its allies invaded Afghanistan in 2001 under the guise of fighting terrorism, and three successive U.S. presidential administrations have said over 16 years that the Taliban are on the verge of defeat. This has remained an elusive goal, raising questions about the U.S. presence in Afghanistan. The Taliban, on the contrary, have boosted their campaign of violence across the country and are targeting more civilians and security forces. More recently, Daesh Takfiri terrorists have also joined the foray, taking advantage of the raging chaos and established a foothold in the war-torn country. The Takfiri outfit has also stepped up terror attacks in Afghanistan despite the presence of thousands of U.S.-led NATO troops there. Touching on the recent massacres of a large number of innocent people at the hands of Daesh terrorists in the country, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution expressed regret over Afghan civilian toll. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei has said that the U.S. has relocated the terror group from the Middle East to the South Asian country in order to justify its military presence in the region.
همان دست‌هایی که داعش را به وجود آوردند چه در عراق چه در سوریه و اون جنایات را به وسیله داعش مرتکب شدند و داعش رو ابزاری قرار دادن برای اون همه ظلم بزرگ به مردم، همونها باز دارن داعش رو منتقل میکنن به اینجا، به افغانستان.
Describing the U.S. as the main source of insecurity in Afghanistan, Ayatollah Khamenei noted that Washington seeks to keep regional governments and nations busy with their problems in a bid to prevent them from countering the Zionist regime. Ayatollah Khamenei also stressed that the killings which have occurred over the past 20 years were the handiwork of Washington's elements. Analysts believe the U.S. government exerts all efforts in order to balkanize the countries it invades.
Only the military phase has come to an end. Now the rest will be done through economic leverage and pressures. They plan to partition, for example, Syria into the Kurdish-held territories, and they will funnel all funds and, foreign assistance and economic, assistance to these areas.
The U.S. and its allies attacked Afghanistan in 2001 with the stated goal of toppling the Taliban regime and dismantling the Al-Qaeda. The Afghanistan war has been described by some as one of the most unpopular conflicts in modern history. Although the war aimed to purportedly establish security by bringing down the Taliban, the goal has not been achieved after nearly 17 years. Security is still elusive, and terror attacks have increased dramatically as Daesh is gaining ground in the already war-battered country.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate from the American Institute for Foreign Policy, we have Michael Lane, who joins us from Washington, D.C. Welcome. We're looking at reports that indicate that many Daesh terrorists, as I'm sure you're aware, are leaving the Middle East region after suffering defeat there, and they are settling in Afghanistan. First of all, how are they getting there? Why are they choosing Afghanistan as a destination?
Well, I think it's an obvious choice for the defeated ISIS in the theaters of Syria and Iraq. They have really no place else to go. Right now, Afghanistan provides something of a safe sanctuary for them. There's not enough security forces really to cover the entire country. In fact, it's often been said, and it's partly true, that the government of Afghanistan is really only the government of Kabul and doesn't really control the whole country. There's a lot of opposition to the government security forces from the Taliban. They're not necessarily perfect allies with ISIS, but there is certainly room inside the outlying areas of Afghanistan for more than one terrorist group to operate, and I think the ISIS fighters look at it as sort of a safe haven.
Okay, so they're looking at it as a sort of a safe haven. Tell us their relationship vis-a-vis the Taliban and what their goals are, since in some respects their goals do intertwine?
Yes, they're, as I said, they're not perfect allies, but they certainly have, you know, some things in common. They would both like to defeat the United States, which makes us a common enemy of theirs. We are hoping to keep the established government in Kabul going strong and extend its influence over the entire countryside. That would be something that both of them would object to. They have ideologies that are similar. They have ideologies that conflict. But right now, I think it's more that they have the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And so they can come up with something of an uneasy alliance at this point, which, you know, goes for a lot of countries in that region. There are innumerable, literally innumerable countries that, you know, the shifting alliances are not necessarily based on areas in common, other than the fact that they have a common enemy.
Very well. Let me introduce Said Mohsen Abbas from London. He's a journalist and political commentator. Said Mohsen Abbas, welcome. Let me ask you first a reaction, if I may. Iran's leader has spoken about Afghanistan, and he has said that the U.S. is transferring Daesh terrorists there to justify its presence there. He says the relocation has come after the Takfiri group suffered defeats elsewhere in the Middle East region. Do you believe that the U.S. has a hand in the way that Daesh has now settled in Afghanistan, partly?
Well, the thing is, it's been fairly clear that the U.S. has been, at the very least, rather soft and gentle on ISIS across the entire region. There are those, and I'm probably one of those, who agrees with the actual notion that the U.S. are the very creators of ISIS itself. In fact, it serves their purposes in every theater of operation that we've seen so far. Why should Afghanistan be any different? In reality, having lost in the Middle East, they seem to get ferried out or get given safe haven from their escape from Raqqa, and now suddenly we are seeing them emerging within the territories of Afghanistan in increased numbers. They were there before, but there have been double and tripling of their numbers, and both from Russian intelligence sources and other independent sources as well. So I think Ayatollah Khamenei is absolutely right to highlight this issue. That the ISIS are there in Afghanistan. They are the ones who are perpetrating most of these explosions, targeting mainly Shia organizations or individuals or citizens or locations, largely to try and pull Iran probably into the fray somehow.
This U.S. being either having a hand in the creation of Daesh or supporting Daesh, Michael Lane, is not something new. This accusation has been leveled against the U.S. many times. So I'm going to ask you whether you agree or not, and if not, can you please defend why it's not in any way supporting the Daesh terrorists? Our guest there also said that the U.S. has been soft
right
on the Daesh terrorists in the region.
Right. I certainly would disagree with that. Look, there are elements of our policy that may have even directly benefited Daesh in their fight. But look, how did the big criticism of President Obama back here in the United States is that when ISIS was getting started, he ignored them, he dismissed them as a, quote, junior varsity team, and essentially didn't take them seriously while they were taking town after town and thousands upon thousands of square kilometers in the region, to the point where all of a sudden he woke up and said, oh, wow. So to the extent that we did nothing about them, the blame can be shared by us. The second point that I think is legitimate criticism is that we have provided aid to many of our allies, and some of that aid made a second and a third stop on its way to Daesh. Because again, back to the theory that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, In certain places, they were fighting side by side with some of the Syrian rebels that we were supporting, and that created an opportunity for our aid to help them, although it was not the intent of our aid, and I'm sure we had some pretty harsh words for the people who would give it away. But if you look at the United States' overall record, we didn't prosecute the campaign under the Obama administration the way it should have been done. We weren't in it to win it. We were just sort of there to, you know, engage in a military conflict. When President Trump came in, he said, okay, we're no longer going to have targets of opportunity approved by the White House. From now on, the general in the theater is going to have the opportunity to identify targets and attack them. The rules of engagement were changed, and it was pretty short order when, with United States help, in fact, United States participation, ISIS, you know, collapsed in a matter of months. I think that we are still hopeful. And in fact, we changed the policy of, you know, taking back the land and letting them escape under Obama to annihilating them on their escape. Now, you're not going to get 100% of them. A certain percent did escape from Raqqa, places perhaps, and make their way to Afghanistan. But that was not United States policy. And I believe, as President Trump just 2 days ago articulated, that we are done talking with the Taliban, similarly to the extent that ISIS is in the same theater. We're done talking with them, and I think you'll see a ramp up of the military campaign being prosecuted to militarily destroy each of those groups to give the regime in Kabul a better chance at survival.
That approach, in part, Sayed Mohsen Abbas, has been approached by the U.S. in three successive presidential terms from three different presidents, trying to figure out this quagmire militarily. It has failed. It's been 16 or 17 years now almost. Why does the U.S. insist and keep thinking that there's a military solution?
Well, I really don't think they understand the gravity of what goes on within the Middle East, and the complexity is beginning to dawn on everybody. But then, I don't think it's naivety as well. I think there are certain departments within the US establishment that probably are certainly not complicit within this, are out of their depths in what's going on in the Middle East. But I really don't think that there is a complete ignorance. There are sections of the US and certainly the British intelligence services who know very well what's going on in the Middle East and also know the people who are against ISIS. My question really is that if we're all against ISIS and we're against Daesh, then why are we not on the same side? When it comes to, say, nations like Iran, who have been consistently fighting ISIS, or, for instance, Hezbollah, who's fought these sort of forces, the US continues to insist on these two particularly as being their enemies on an equal footing, if not worse, than ISIS. That for me is slightly problematic, because quite clearly we're dealing with two different situations and issues, and yet the American establishment seems to manage to conflate this. Now, in Afghanistan, the truth is America has failed continuously. They have not been able to eradicate Al-Qaeda. They've not been able to eradicate the Taliban as they know it. The Pakistan army, they cannot get the Pakistan army to do what they want, because they're probably pulling the strings on a lot of what the Afghanistan Taliban are doing. The Americans have got their hands in definitely trying to allow India to have a greater proxy role within Afghanistan, which Pakistan will not allow. In the West now, we see the front against the Shia and the pro-Iranian elements within Afghanistan. You see a full-on attack by the ISIS. That ultimately serves the purposes of the US. The US sees Iran as the number one enemy, in fact, the number one terrorist state in that region. That's from Donald Trump himself and others within the administration. Now, as long as you've got that attitude, you've got a case of choosing which enemy is more dangerous if you're part of the State Department. Uh-huh. And if Iran is your greater enemy, then you're going to take sides with ISIS in places like Western Afghanistan. We're going to have the same situation as we had in Syria. But then, is that what the U.S. wants? Is that what somebody in the transnational corporation element wants? That a war should continue and we should have a continued chaos in the region?
Great questions there, Michael Lane. What is your answer, especially on the fact that Iran is and has been successful in fighting these Daesh terrorists?
Well, it wasn't a matter of, in that case, what was our common enemy, going back to the same theme I've articulated, because certainly Iran, or almost every state, but Iran and the United States, believe that the destruction of ISIS was necessary, and both made their contributions towards that destruction of ISIS. But what the United States was looking at realistically in terms of a cooperative effort was that we are adversarial powers, and there's no reason to think that in the near future we're going to be able to overcome that adversarial relationship. And so it was a matter of who was in what position on the ground when the fight was over, that we were looking past the battle into the end game. And that's why there wasn't a higher level of cooperation, because we are still adversaries. Now, looking at the Afghanistan situation, I believe that, again, the Kabul regime does not extend its capabilities over the entire country. So it's going to be a matter of picking and choosing where it's going to be able to. And, you know, certainly Iran, I think, would feel very uncomfortable with the existence of ISIS on the three provinces, for instance, that border Iran. But on the other hand, I think they would feel not uncomfortable at all with the Taliban having some significant power and presence in those three provinces, because for the last several years, Iran and the Taliban have been warming their relations, knowing or expecting that at the end of the difficulties, the Taliban would have some influence in Afghanistan, and by having a warm relationship with the Taliban, Iran would therefore be in a position to extend its influence to whatever came next. So, you know, who knows what's actually going to happen there? But I think that, you know, I think the point is that the ISIS, Iran recognizes as an enemy, the Taliban not so much.
I'm not too sure about Iran and the Taliban warming their relationships. That's not officially something that's on record. However, I do know that at one point, and I'm sure you'll agree, Michael Lane, that the U.S. had a warm relationship with the Taliban. Maybe it's a good time to do a flashback and go back to what Hillary Clinton said at one point, and how they helped the Taliban and helped create the Taliban at one point. Perhaps you can refresh our memory on that, Michael Lane.
Well, silly Hillary, you know, too bad that she was as naive as she was. But again, the enemy of her enemy was her friend. So she was doing her best to warm up to the Taliban. But let's also look at another unwritten piece of history, which was that when the United States first went into Afghanistan as a result of the Taliban providing safe sanctuary to al-Qaeda to plan their 9/11 attacks, Iran and the United States were unwritten, unspoken, tacit partners in the overthrow of the Taliban, because back then the Taliban was a very serious enemy and a serious threat to the Iran regime.
Well, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, if we want to take a look at one of the functions that Afghanistan has for the U.S., I would guess that having military bases there is probably top of the list. And the focus there can be in both ways. One, going to the west, where Iran is. Secondly, going towards east, where, north Russia, and then further east, China. Do you think that the U.S. is looking at this geostrategic position of Afghanistan militarily, considering those countries?
I think it's absolutely critical. America sees its geopolitical interests locked in Afghanistan in a way which is probably not as vital in any other part of that world, arguably, because if you think about what's going on there, the landlocked Afghanistan region provides access potentially for oil from Caspian Sea down through Afghanistan into Pakistan and the Gwadar port, the only deep water port down in the Indian Ocean side of the neck of the woods, if you like. And so there's one reason that you've got a huge possibility of getting oil and gas through pipelines across Afghanistan, which currently perhaps is not safe enough to do anyway. And the Gwadar port is almost ready. Second thing is you've got China talking about about this link of the old Silk Road, bringing trade, and Afghanistan is right at the heart of that. It's right smack bang in the middle of that whole potential process. Of course, they're building, the Chinese are building the roads through Pakistan already, right down to Gwadar. So there's a huge trading thing, which is obviously a US-Chinese rivalry, which is clearly going to be there. Then on top of this, you've got Pakistan itself, Balochistan, which is a point of real action and overlaps into Afghanistan, because it's a toing and froing between that region which is going on, where the Pakistanis themselves have got huge wealth, huge resources, the fifth biggest copper mine, black diamonds, gas, you name it, it's there. What we're talking about is not just geopolitical interest in terms of military bases, which is absolutely correct, we're also talking about huge wealth. The Afghanis themselves have cocaine and, rather opium, poppy seeds, all these sort of things are there. That trade is absolutely huge. Now, if you've got this huge economic concern, it would be naive to assume that the US is not keeping an eye on this, or there is not any nothing going on. Of course it's going on. And those routes through from Afghanistan to Pakistan are some of the prime routes for getting that wealth or those minerals or those resources. So it's not only a geopolitical military significance that Afghanistan has for the US, it also has a financial interest.
Mm-hmm. Michael Lane, since we're quickly running out of time, I didn't know what to ask you except for what Trump has said. You mentioned that a little bit earlier, but he said, quote, finish what we have to finish, suggesting obviously he sees a military victory. And if you can please answer that within the context that the Taliban had reacted to that, saying that they never wanted to talk to the U.S. anyways, but one senior member has said that he suspected efforts would still be made to get negotiations going.
Yes, well, I believe we'll hear more about President Trump's ideas tonight during his State of the Union address. But looking back to last Monday when he said this, I think he's threatening increased military activity. He's going to empower the theater commander, General Nicholson, to have a lot more freedom to pursue the campaign, to put military pressure on the Taliban, and to really hurt them to the point of hopeful destruction, but not necessarily hurt them to the point where they come back to the bargaining table. Simultaneously, I will note to your second point, Secretary Tillerson did say that he would be willing to talk to the Taliban anytime they're ready.
And finally, and quickly, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, 30 seconds to you. If the U.S.'s approach towards a military solution is to do what they did recently and to drop the mother of all bombs into Afghanistan, do you think that there's any chance that the U.S. can militarily win?
You can't win in Afghanistan. The terrain is such, the nature of the people is such, the investment from all sorts of other agencies and vested interest groups within Afghanistan and outside Afghanistan just simply won't allow for an all-out victory. I don't think it's possible, and I think the US has to take stock, and I think they have to really recognize that there is more damage than there is good, unless of course they recognize that if there is a lot of wealth being accumulated and they're keeping the region embroiled in conflict, unless those are their objectives, in which case then you can't persuade the US to come out of there, then the likes of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and the whole mess that is Afghanistan right now is a perfectly convenient situation.
We're going to end with a thank you, journalist and political commentator Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, and thank you from the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Vitale and the entire team in the capital, Tehran. Goodbye.